Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Puck and Pod. My name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
Gentlemen, it's been a really, really sad week. Specifically weekend, I think, for us. As we record this, it's Tuesday. We had Thanksgiving, so now we're recording our new episode today. We've kind of experienced a little bit of sadness on the fandom end for us. Cheering for the Blue Jays, which is, you know, I don't watch baseball typically, but playoff baseball for me is really exciting stuff. Yeah. It's been a lot of fun to watch the Blue Jays, you know, going through the series with the Yankees and then up to this point against the Mariners. It's definitely tense right now.
I've been thoroughly impressed, Joe, actually.
I know.
Through our group chats and stuff.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my God, what's going on? And did you see that? And what's happening here? And I'm just like, yes, Joe.
Like,
I'm
watching Toronto Blue Jays games. I'm watching Toronto Maple Leaf games. Just, I do that anyway, though. Like, I watch hockey. Like, I'm one of those fans that likes hockey in general, so I'll watch all the teams play.
Yeah.
Like, on Saturday, every single team played in the league. So I was watching hockey from, I don't know, 9:30 in the morning till, you know,
10 at night.
Yeah, like it's fun. It's exciting.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, my team lost, but that's part of the game too. And that's something we'll get into a little bit later when it comes to hockey. But let's stick to baseball right now. I mean, what do you guys think is happening right now with the Blue Jays compared to what we saw against the Yankees, which, by the way, was a really exciting series?
The Yankees lose.
The Yankees lose.
Which was hilarious.
Well,
by the way,
certainly a benefit that the Blue Jays got that bye past the wild card series, because that really drove the Yankee series. But talk about a tale of two series between the Yankees and the Mariners. It's definitely been, you know, yin and yang.
Yin and yang, yeah.
Complete hype up for the beginning of game one of the ALCS against Seattle. And within 24 hours, you're down two games.
Yeah.
It's insane. I mean, that's baseball, right? They don't need they don't need 2 days between games and stuff like that. They can play. They theoretically could have played all four games back to back to back
they
to back.
Doubleheaders during the season.
Yeah. The only reason they didn't was because of travel.
The travel. Yeah, exactly. And now being down two games to none, going into Seattle, they have their work cut out for them.
Yeah, they do.
And T-Mobile Park is not a hitting park.
Yeah.
It's a very pitcher-friendly park. It's a large park. The way it's set up, center field is huge. Like, you're not going to hit a home run to center field.
It's interesting, though, because, you know, I think back to the Yankees series, specifically that last game against the Yankees where, you know, they won stealing bases and doing those kind of things. So maybe that is a benefit to the Blue Jays. But really what it comes down to is they have to get their pitching in order, right? They have to get their pitching and their hitting in order.
Well, the problem with what you just said is that, for one, they have to walk. They're not doing that.
Yeah.
The Mariners pitchers are pounding the strike zone.
They're way too good.
And two, they're getting flyouts, groundouts, strikeouts. The Jays aren't stringing hits together like they were against the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mariners staff is very, very good. And what's kind of frustrating is that so is the Jays pitching staff, but they haven't matched the energy of Seattle.
No. And the acquisitions, obviously, that they made at the Mariners made at the deadline really helped. Like, Eugenio Suarez has been great. Rally still carrying his MVP stats, obviously, into the postseason. You know, you're playing against the MVP of the league this year, right? So, of course, you got to step it up. The Yankees were one level. You were on the same level in terms of wins with them during the season, albeit, again, you won the season series. But, again, I would say probably the Mariners are a step up because you are facing the MVP this year.
I think no matter what happens, though, and maybe you can agree with me, maybe you can disagree with me, but I think no matter what happens in this playoff round, the Blue Jays have something to hang their head high on, in the fact that they were able to win the division, they were able to make it to the ALCS. Who knows what they're capable of next year if they can make the right moves, right? But maybe there's more to it than that.
Well, is it okay for the Leafs to keep losing in the first round every year?
Fair enough. But the Blue Jays, I mean, you know, arguably the Blue Jays, they don't make it this far every year, right? Like, this is something that I think they as players can at least look at and go,
yeah,
we did that. Right.
The way the playoff structure is in baseball is more difficult than,
for sure,
I would say, probably all of the other sports. But to be devil's advocate, it's a results-driven business.
Yep.
If you're not first, you're last.
Yeah.
Who said that?
And I'm sure, like, you know, the
the game yesterday when the Jays lost, the fans were walking out of that building going, it's over, right? Like, they're not sitting here going, well, at least we made it this far. You know, I'm sort of looking at it as the arguably devil's advocate, where I'm like, you know, hey, at least they made it this far. But of course, I don't cheer for them for the 180 some odd games they play every year. Yeah. So, you know, I can see where the frustration might be on a fan's mind.
Well, you were talking about the bullpen, right? Not being consistent. There was even a little bit of in the Yankees series. Like, they were great in game one. Blue Jays got a 12-0 lead in game two of the, like I said, the ALDS. As soon as the bullpen started coming in, the Yankees started creeping and creeping and creeping. You started to go, oh no, the Yankees are waking up. The sleeping giant's going. You get into game three, the Yankees take you. You're like, oh crap, now they really are showing up. And then, you know, luckily, again, the bullpen had kind of a down turn there. And then you get to game four where there's the bullpen game and they were lights out. Like, that was, yeah, it was a mastermind by Schneider. So yeah, now you're seeing kind of more of the weaknesses of the bullpen, I guess, in this series against the Mariners. You got to hope that, I guess, your starters can take you as far as they can.
Well, and then you get an injury to Lucas, like what happened the other day, right? And this is a guy, yeah, who basically was a big proponent of the Yankee series. Takes a pitch to the knee and or a shin or whatever, and he's out for at least that game. What do you think a kind of effect that has on the team after that kind of injury?
I mean, a guy like Lucas, as much as he's played a huge role,
yeah,
throughout the season and even throughout the playoffs so far, mm-hmm, he's a player that can probably be subbed in for an equally talented, equally results player. Yeah, because
he's not like
player,
a big star player. Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's a good hitter when he's on his, you know.
Of course, and he's a left-handed bat, which, right, is important in the lineup. I would say, now, I don't think the Mariners are missing any key players for this series. I, yeah, don't believe.
Yeah.
The Jays are missing arguably their second best player, period.
Bichette.
Yeah. Yep. And on top of that, the pitching staff has not been set up the way that they had success during the regular season. And I get it, you know, especially in the shorter series where there's only five games, you have to be picky choosy, right? And then, you know, in the Boston-New York series, they had to be even more picky choosy with only three games. Right. So it kind of leads me to my next point about John Schneider and some of his pitching decisions. As you said, the bullpen game was, it was a chess match, and he executed perfectly.
Yeah.
And then you go into game one with the Mariners, you have your ace in Kevin Gausman playing, and he wasn't even pitching poorly. And I know John Schneider's a really big matchup guy. You know, make sure you're righty on righty, lefty on lefty when you can. You know, baseball's very numbers driven. We already all know that.
Yeah.
But he took Gausman out of that game after 64 yeah. pitches. This guy pitches 90, 95, 100 pitches a game all year long.
That's all the talk that I'm hearing on sports radio is like he lost hope in Gausman way too early.
Yeah, way too like early. You got to give your starters a chance to get out of jams.
Yeah,
and I mean,
and that's something that Gausman is well known for. Correct? Like he's. From what I've heard, again, I don't know this, but from what I've heard the talk of when it comes to Gausman is that he's able to get himself out of jams, and that's typically what happens with him is if he gets himself in a jam, he usually works his way out of it, right?
He's definitely a pressure pitcher. Like, yeah. You know, you don't really see him, like, you know, like getting yeah. anxious or stressed. So he's focused. He's, mm-hmm. He knows what he's the game plan is for him. You know, sometimes you get a home run against him. You know, that happens. You know, but he's a pressure pitcher, so yeah. I agree. Like, Schneider needs to keep him in.
Yeah,
in a situation like that.
When asked about it, he said that the main reason was that his velocity was down, his command was slightly off. Yeah, for that inning.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. This guy has been pitching in the league for 15 years. Like, give him a shot here. That's why you signed him. That's why you have him pitching your first game. He's yeah. your best pitcher. Yeah.
And you can tell, like, again, being in somebody in my position where you don't watch every game, like, you can tell Gausman is the guy. Like, you can tell, yeah. You know, when you watch him pitch, he's the guy that controls the game.
Yeah.
And so you can sense the importance of having a player like him in.
Yeah.
So it's really definitely, you know, obvious that it was a too early to pull him.
Well, and the Jays stars from the Yankees series need to start showing up for this series. They have, between Ernie Clement and Vladimir Guerrero, they had 18 hits in the Yankees series, and now that's over four games. They have one hit in the first two games between the two of them and the Mariners so far.
Yep.
I have a question to broach you guys, being Toronto fans in general. Like, you follow the Leafs, of course, and of course the Blue Jays. One thing that I have heard, and this is coming from a national perspective, there is the Toronto mindset where if you lose a game or you lose an inning or if you lose a period or whatever, there's that mentality of, oh, here we go again. And actually, this was broached actually when it came to the Raptors as well, because it's the same thing falls on Raptors football, or basketball as well as football when you look at the CFL. So do you believe in that I don't know, I don't want to call it a curse, but because I as a Canucks fan totally know what that feels like as well. Do you believe in that sort of Toronto mindset? Here we go again.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of based upon a little bit of history, obviously. You know, the Blue Jays and the Leafs have had problems in the playoffs over the last decades.
What do you call that? Murphy's Law? Like, yeah. If it can go wrong, it will?
Yeah. I would, obviously, the Leafs is a little bit longer because we're looking at almost like 60 years since they won a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
But like, if you're looking at recent history, like the last decade, they've only made it to the second round twice, but have made the playoffs every year. And then you're looking at the Blue Jays, who missed playoffs last year, but they were making some playoff runs before that, and they couldn't even get a win in the wild card series. So when you have that biased approach, because you're seeing kind of the same things kind of start happening, and they got swept by the Mariners in the wild card series that they played a couple of years ago. Obviously, this is now the ALCS, got more games to play, but still, you know, you have that bit of worry because you've already played this team once before and kind of failed against them.
And also, like, you know, you lose that first game, the swagger you had coming into it is gone, right?
Like I said, in 24 hours, they were down two games.
Yeah.
Within 24 hours.
Yeah.
I remember we were at Mom and Dad's for Thanksgiving dinner the night that they played game one. And we were watching the pregame. I didn't know the game didn't start till 5. I thought it started at 4. Right. So we're there at like 2 o'clock, 3:30 comes around. I'm like, okay, let's turn the pregame on, that sort of thing. It's going. 4 o'clock comes by. They start doing interviews. It's like 4:10, 4:20. I'm like, let's go here, man. And then like 4:30, 4:40. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Yeah. I checked the guide. It's like, game doesn't start till 5. I'm like, oh my God. So I'm like, I was literally trying to hype myself up for 3 hours leading up to the game.
That's disappointing. Actually, I totally know what you mean when it comes down to that. I can see that.
Back to your point about that feeling heavy, and the history of that. Specifically with the Jays, the last two out of the last three playoff series, whether it be a play-in series or an ALDS, they were the favorite team two out of three times.
Yeah.
And as Paul said, they didn't even win a game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that weighs heavy, and here we go again comes into mind because your team is supposed to be doing well,
and they
fail you. They let you down.
Where did the Mariners finish in their division this year compared to the Blue Jays? The Blue Jays,
they were right behind Detroit, I believe.
The Blue Jays won their division.
Yeah. Yep.
And you're saying Detroit won their division?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah, I do believe so.
Well, that would make sense considering Mariners played Detroit. So to me, then that mirrors kind of what the Blue Jays were up against with the Yankees, being that they finished ahead of the Yankees.
Oh, no. Seattle won their division.
Okay, so Seattle won their division. There, so it's two divisional champions facing each other.
But they had a worse record than the Jays did.
Yeah.
You know, by four games. So, but I mean, that's not huge. But
paper, comparison-wise,
I would say the Jays probably have a better team on paper. It's probably slight.
Maybe injuries are playing a factor in that scenario, though.
I mean,
right?
Bichette really is the only guy down.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. So people just aren't hitting. People aren't hitting. I mean, it could be a combination of things. Could be Mariners pitching's better than the Blue Jays pitching right now. It's in their heads. There's a lot of stuff. Maybe it's bad management too, right? Like, there's always that aspect of things. But I can understand the frustration on Jays fans' minds when it comes to this is where you're supposed to be and here's where you are, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And that's frustrating. And like you say, like, it, you know, here we go again mentality. It's going to creep in when it happens all the time.
Now, they could win the next two games in Seattle. Exactly. This is a different conversation.
That would be unbelievable, right? In fact, I say we record a new podcast if that happens.
Actually, I'm pretty sure they play the next three games in Seattle.
Yeah, they do.
For whatever reason.
It's kind of the same. It's the same from what I've heard. It's the same playoff format as like the AHL, right? Do you remember when Abbotsford Canucks were playing? They had to do the first two games at home. Or no, first two games away, three games at home, and then another game away if it keeps going,
right,
kind of
right,
thing.
Right.
I think it was either that way or the other way around. Yeah. But anyway, they get to play three games in one location. So
I was reading just a little bit of an article, and former Cy Young winner and MLB Hall of Famer John Smoltz was talking about, he said the same thing. He doesn't understand why Schneider, and we're not even talking about Gausman. Yesavage in the second game was the same.
Yeah.
Like, yes, he let three runs the first inning, and they had the bullpen going right away. The Jays tied the game, and he pitched well after that, I thought.
Yeah.
And again, I thought they yanked him early too.
Yeah.
Yeah, they totally did.
And Smoltz is like, these guys are your pitchers, starting pitchers for a reason.
Yeah.
No wonder your bullpen's giving up stuff. You're using them too much.
Well, yeah, they're getting tired, right?
They're tired. You know,
and the Mariners are coming off of a game where they beat Detroit after 15 innings.
15 innings.
Yeah. And they're playing 2 days later as if it's no big deal. So they're coming in confident. Like, I'm thinking of game one specifically here. They're coming in confident. And the Jays have had, what, a 7-day rest or 8-day rest or something like that? So you have to think the Jays are supposed to be the stronger team in that game.
Well, like, it makes you wonder, did they do their homework before the series? Because it seems like they're not prepared for the Mariners right now, to be honest.
Like from an outside perspective, it's like, were they celebrating a couple of days extra? Yeah,
too much.
You know?
It's... Like I said, a tale of two series, right?
Don't get me going on their celebrations. I mean, they've celebrated three times now and they've done nothing.
Yeah.
They've really done nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's the sort of the big talk amongst people who aren't familiar with baseball. It's like, why are they having a champagne party after each round? They should be happy, celebrating, high-fiving, and then going prepare for the next round, right? I mean,
it's not just the Blue Jays, though. I have seen the other.
Oh, yeah. It's not at all. It's baseball in general. Like, you see that everywhere. But that's the sort of the culture with baseball versus every other sport, right?
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
You don't see football players celebrating basketball like that after every winner. Basketball or hockey, same thing. The mentality is, okay, we won. Let's go get ready for the next round. And I mean, you know, I think about, like, you know, when a team wins, say in hockey, they go and do interviews and they say, we haven't done anything yet. You know, we should be happy, but we're not satisfied. We need to win the cup, right? That's what we're going for here. We're going for the World Series. We should be focused on that. You know, I mean, not to say we shouldn't be happy about a series win, especially against the Yankees, right? But, you know, champagne celebrations and stuff like that it's really bizarre, I will admit.
It's not good for your blood.
We got two games to focus now. Game three is going to be Shane Bieber starting, who's been great. So
the whole team needs to step up.
Oh, they do, for sure.
Yeah.
And they did just announce today that Max Scherzer is going to start game four.
Okay.
Good.
So,
Now, you know, the big acquisition, obviously, the offseason for the Jays was Anthony Santander. Obviously, injured season, needed to fit in this year. I probably was unsuccessful, you could say, this year. He did have a hit, obviously, in the Mariners series so far. If the Jays can't make it past this round, just Seattle is too much, he's got to have a bounce back year last year, or that is going to very much be a failed signing at this point. Like, he was great in Baltimore, but again, different managing,
right?
Coaching. Schneider is more of a player's coach. He's not as hard. They have Mattingly there. That's for that. But nonetheless, whatever needs to be done with Anthony Santander to get him clicked into the Jays system and to start producing more, that's going to be important next year for sure. Because
he's looked lost.
Yeah, I can give him the bye this year because of the injuries and the first year. But if he's the same next year, I'll be very angry.
Yeah,
that's a lot of money allocated to a player who's not producing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, I think the argument, you could say the same argument about, you know, I wanted to say Bautista for a second.
Vladdy
Guerrero, right? Like, he is being paid a lot of money to not produce a lot of hits and not really. I mean, he's doing stuff for sure. I mean, you know, he was a big part of that Yankee series of games, but It just feels like, from what you guys have said, it just feels yeah. like he's not really showing his value.
He's a bit streaky.
Yeah.
Streaky a bit, I would say.
Yeah. So far, for sure. Like, the Mariners have his number so far, so whatever he adjustments he has to make, mentally or physically, he's got to be prepared for tomorrow.
Maybe it's karma for the Yankee lose.
Yeah, maybe.
The Blue Jays lost.
Did you see the look on Jeter and A-Rod's face?
Yeah, they were
unimpressed.
Yeah, it was funny to watch. I'll admit
it was very.
David Ortiz, former Red Sox, loved it.
Yeah, he's having a blast. Let me ask you guys a question. Let's flip the coin for a second and look on the other side. The Mariners specifically, what is it that they're doing right that the Blue Jays aren't doing right?
They're being more patient, I think, at the plate specifically. The Jays clearly have come into this series with a mindset of jump on the pitches early in the count, don't let the pitcher get ahead of you, and it's not being successful. Successful. They're just, I don't know, the Mariners are drawing more walks, they're seeing more pitches. They're getting the Blue Jays pitch count up a little bit. I know I argued that Gausman got pulled after 64 pitches, but Yesavage the other night had an inning where I think he had 29 pitches in one inning.
Wow.
That's not good. That's really not, right?
Really not.
And then, you know, Gilbert, on the other hand, had like a 9-pitch inning, and then he had a 12-pitch inning. So it's like the Jays are trying to be aggressive, and it's not working, and I think they need to flip that a little bit.
Well, and, you know, like they've done in the past, I've seen it where they've – especially with some of their star players, where they'll take the first strike to see how the pitcher is throwing. As you're saying, they haven't been doing that this series so far. They've been very, very aggressive. This is not a team, I guess, you can be aggressive with. You got to analyze and go from there. Like, you can't be acting too quick on these guys.
So, Paul, in your mind, what do you think that the Mariners are doing right that the Jays are not?
Same as Brandon, really. It's patience and maybe professionalism. I'm not trying to mean that that the Jays aren't professional. It's they're dialed in, and it seems like the Jays are, you know, a team that's wanting and ready to win, but they're not dialed in the same way that the
Mariners almost
are.
Wonder though if the Jays went into this series, specifically game one, going, we are going to destroy these guys.
Consider what they did to the Yankees.
And then the Mariners just showed them defense like they haven't seen yet, right? And then offense, of course, same thing. But at the same time, I wonder too if some of it is, like you say, dialed in, if the Mariners are just that much more dialed in than the Jays are, you know, like maybe they're underplaying the Mariners in their minds. Like they walk in going like, these guys are not nothing compared to us.
It looks like the Jays are playing timidly.
They're a little scared.
That's
kind of what I mean.
Intimidated by the Mariners. And I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
But it's almost like they're just waiting for the next guy. Like they're waiting for someone to step up.
Somebody else to step up
other than each other. Whereas the Mariners are just going out and playing.
And what's funny about that is that's relatable to how I'm experiencing my hockey team right now, where it's like they're waiting for the next guy to do something else. Instead of taking it upon themselves, they're waiting for somebody else to come in and do it. And like I can totally agree with that. I think from the outside looking in, I can see that in the Jays.
Yeah.
Specifically. For me, it feels like, the Mariners are so aggressive that the Jays don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
However, now I wonder if now that they're going to Seattle to play, they get to hit first. Is this going to be the Jays sort of opportunity to be that much more aggressive on the Mariners? I don't know what being an away team in baseball is like, but being the fact that you get to hit first, maybe that plays a part in that. It changes their structure, mindset.
Probably come down to pitching too, right? You know, like Bieber's got to be on his game. Like as you mentioned, Schneider didn't really trust him in game three and the Yankee series. He's got to just put a little faith into your team. Build the morale. Like, obviously, the morale's down right now. So
you need that confidence.
Whatever you need to say, like, you know, effing this, whatever he said after the series was over, you know,
start
whatever.
Spreading
amp
the news.
Them up and get them confident and believing in their game. Because the reason why they had like a 11-game win streak this year, the reason why they were top in their divisions, because they believed in each other. Do it again.
Yeah.
You can 100%
win.
And maybe, you know, maybe the team has had a couple meetings or whatever and got together themselves to say that, because that's what leadership is all about. Absolutely. Right. But I think that's a really important factor to take into a game like that, especially in the playoffs. But,
yeah.
You know, this is it's very important that they at least get one more win, because you want to be able to come back to Toronto. But
yeah, like it's not unheard of to be down three games and still come back. However, you don't want to be down three games.
You don't want to be. You don't want to be in that position, for sure.
Analytically, going into Seattle, it's not going to be favorable necessarily for the Jays, because you only play three games there during the whole year.
Yeah.
The turf's different. The weather is different. The ballpark is larger. As I mentioned, it's more of a pitcher's ballpark. Something as simple as the cold, damp air. It's the same as here. You know, it's different than the humid, more hot air you get in Toronto. Yeah. The ball flies more. It's like, it's a real disadvantage playing in Seattle sometimes. It's kind of like on the opposite side when you play in, I don't know if it's Denver where the Rockies play. I assume it probably is. But Coors Field in where the Colorado Rockies play.
Yeah.
Which is, we all know, being, you know, they always talk about the air being really thin because of the elevation,
yeah.
Right? Well, you pitchers struggle to pitch there because they can't get as much movement on their ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's sort of that mentality. And obviously, you would hope that they don't go in there with that.
Yeah.
But when you look at the number side of the game, that could be a factor.
I think the other part of it, too, is the fact that they're going into Seattle, which, of course, is 2 hours from Vancouver. So you're going to have fans from BC on both sides of the coin, of course, but you're going to get a lot more Blue Jays fans from what history has shown that are going to go and want to see the Jays play in the playoffs, and they're going to want to cheer on the Jays. And I know the Jays are used to going into Seattle and having more Jay fans there. But I feel like the crowd will play a part in how they perform as well. It's going to be kind of exciting.
Sounds like nosebleed tickets at Mariners games were like $400.
Doesn't surprise me at all. Doesn't surprise me at all. What does a regular season game cost?
We went last summer and we sat right in center field and we paid $41 a ticket.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
So was that like 60 something Canadian?
About $60. Yeah.
Very reasonable.
And I mean, when we went down with Devin and Tiff,
2018,
I think they were like $35. Yeah. So they'd gone up a little bit, but not much for the same seats, because they were really good seats.
Both teams, one of these two teams is going to the World Series. Those tickets are going to be higher next year, guaranteed, because of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's exciting to sort of see what's happening from the outside looking in. Again, I'm somebody who doesn't follow baseball regularly, but I do enjoy watching playoff baseball because of the implications.
Well, you know, if the Mariners do beat the Jays, it's their first World Series
ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible.
That's pretty cool.
Which, again, guarantees that ticket prices go up next year because of that reason, right? But, and I mean, not let alone inflation and all that stuff, but not to get into politics, but part of me wonders, too, just because of the sort of political spectrum of things, how many people actually will go down to Seattle and watch them play. I think, you know, being able to see the Jays in a playoff game in general, more people will go. I think the Seattle kind of infrastructure is hoping so anyway, but we'll see what happens. Well, gentlemen, let's talk a little bit about hockey, because you know, we've got to get through all this sad stuff before we can get to the good exciting stuff. Let's talk a little bit about hockey. What are you guys seeing from the Leafs so far? Our teams both have similar records. You guys are 1-2, we're 1-2 after three games. What have you seen so far from the Leafs in those three games?
Bad first period against Montreal. Particularly, I have to call it William Nylander, because he was giving the puck away like crazy, even though he ended the game with 3 points. I was not a fan, but obviously they took the rest of the game. Two empty netters after, who put them ahead?
Morgan Riley. That's right.
Which there's been a lot expected of him this year to step it up, since Mitch Marner won't be playing the point anymore. So we're happy to obviously see that in the first game. They're not going to play good against Detroit, I guess, this year, because they lost both games in the preseason to Detroit, and now they've lost both games that they've started the season with against Detroit. So I don't know what's going on there.
They're not clicking. I don't like the excuse of new guys. It's early in the season. They got to get their legs, blah, 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 blah. Well, then play in the preseason. Well, I don't want to do that. Yeah. Well, then get to work. Put your work boots on.
Yep.
I'm not seeing enough. You guys know my stance on William Nylander, and it's coming out full right now. He looks like crap. Berube called him out yesterday saying I need no more from him. Like, he looks like he's never played hockey before.
It's interesting because, you know, I pointed out to you, I had watched the Amazon Prime Behind the NHL documentary that they have out right now. And the one sort of episode where they follow the Leafs, you literally hear Berube say, and I told you, it sounded just like you telling him, you got to move your feet. Nylander, you got to move your feet. And
it's his best attribute.
And it just doesn't do it, right? It's like... And in the documentary series, the camera does follow Nylander around a little bit, and he's got this sort of cocky attitude, and it's really funny to watch because it's
you think it's funny?
Like,
I want to choke him out.
I think it's funny because I'm not a Leaf fan, but I totally see what you mean. It's really weird to see because, like, you know, this is a guy who, what have you got to show for yourself over the years that you've been there, other than scoring points?
I was watching that first game with Montreal with my wife.
Yeah.
And she's like, barely watched hockey. And even like, she saw it, like Nylander giving the puck away. She's like, what is that guy doing?
Nothing, sweetheart. Absolutely nothing. That's the problem.
I completely understand that mentality. And again, coming back from that documentary, if he's not changing his game, like he needs to get his head in the right place. And not just him, but the whole team does, but specifically him, right? When it comes down to it, being that he's one of the older core members now, he's a very important part of that team making the kind of money that he's making. He's got to be the guy that shows by example, it's right?
The second most AAV on the team now.
Yeah.
You know,
awesome. One of the highest in the league.
Yeah.
So. I've got 3 points I'd like to make about, and they're all negative points. About what I've seen so far and just kind of get your take specifically, obviously, because you've watched the games, but if you've seen any of it. The first thing for me is power play. Looks terrible.
Yeah, it does.
I'm not even talking about lack of scoring. Like, they've given up 2 shorthanded goals already this season. They look discombobulated. I mean, Morgan Rielly has probably been one of their best players so far this year, if you can, you know, put a positive on the team so far.
Right.
Yeah.
He's looked pretty good. He's looked fast. Well, I mean, we know that I think he dropped 12 pounds or something in the off season. So he knew he had an off year and he went and got in the gym, got to work, and he dedicated himself. And so far, I think he's looked okay. He had a couple of gaffes yesterday, but I mean, as a guy looking to transition to offense, you know this with a Quinn Hughes, they're going to have defensive gaffes every now and again, right? Yeah. So that's my first point. Is that I think that their power play is just lost and they need to get that figured out. My second point is their lack of physicality. It's baffling to me. This is the heaviest team in the NHL by statistical standard.
Yeah.
They are big boys. They've changed their DNA. That was Treliving's whole point. And they're not using the body at all.
And, like, their coach is a physical style coach.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So they're not doing that. A few of the guys that were brought in specifically, and I'm going to pick on Joshua a little bit, because so far he hasn't really been able to do much else right. What I will say is I do like his board play.
Mm-hmm.
That is something I've noticed, that he protects the puck quite well, and he has made a few plays from that. I mean, he's had a little bit of limited ice time, I would say. He's on the third line. But I've seen 4, 5, 6 opportunities where he could go out there and just lay a guy out, and he's going a different direction.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if there's something going on, if there's behind-the-scenes stuff that we don't know about. Maybe him and Berube have talked, and he wants him to tone it down a little. Like, I don't really know, but that's one player that I haven't seen enough physicality out of.
Mm-hmm.
There's multiple, but that's one. So, and that, I found in previous years, has helped the Leafs turn momentum, is they've been able to amp up their physical game, and that's helped them.
Yeah.
Okay. And my third negative point so far is they are still not sticking up for each other.
Yeah. Easton Cowan was cross-checked in the face yesterday.
Yeah.
With three Detroit players surrounding him while he's on the ice. Your rookie player, your best prospect, Matthews casually skates over, tugs on the back of a guy's jersey. You know, hey, back up, leave him alone. It's not nice. You're being a bully. Nylander does a lap. Probably the hardest I've seen him skate all game. Like, why are you not in there putting the guy in a headlock? I'm not saying you have to start feeding him uppercuts.
Yeah,
but do something.
Stand up for your teammate. Yeah.
And that's been something over the years that I've noticed, and it drives me crazy. You watch other teams, and you're like, why not me?
Yeah.
Why not us?
Yeah, yeah.
Why are you so lazy and uninterested and uninvested in the game? And that's what's driving me crazy. I know the Leafs are going to win. I know they're going to figure it out. I don't have a problem feeling that way. I'm confident in that. But while they're getting to this point and while they figure it out, it's frustrating to watch.
Yeah, for
sure. We're the ones dedicating our time, and they know I pay extra money to watch them on TV, and it's not even fun to watch. Yeah. Again, I know we're only three games in, but this isn't the first time we're talking about this.
Yeah. No.
Yep.
And what's really interesting is you're not the only team talking about it.
Of course.
It's and I think, like you said, it actually does stem a lot from these top line players playing like one preseason game. And, you know, we talk about how unimportant the preseason is, but really it's important to get guys going, right? To get to that level so that you are in the regular season earning those points, right? And yeah, I think you're right. I think really it stems down, like, why aren't you playing more games in the preseason? Yep. You know, why aren't you getting your structure going? You know, if you're a coach, why aren't you getting your system going so they know it on day one, right?
Well, touching upon you know, Brandon's points, because you're wanting my opinion on it. I since last year, especially in the beginning of the season, with the Leafs power play, I haven't been a huge Mark Savard fan, to be honest.
Is that that coach?
He's the power play coach.
Yeah.
They don't seem to. They don't seem to have a plan in place. Like, they do have a plan in place, but they don't seem to make it happen. They're kind of all over the place all the time, and it's frustrating to watch the power play. And then, like you're saying, they give out the puck, and then you got two shorthanded goals this season. So, yeah. He's got to go next year if they can't have at least mid tier power play this year. If they're near the bottom of the league, he's got
to
go.
Let me ask you this: what is the PK like comparable to the power play?
Obviously, they're missing Mitch Marner. Like, he was obviously an amazing defensive specialist for them. I was going to kind of touch upon this, like, third point in regards to sticking up for each other. I think the PK, at least, is going to need more time to get cohesive as the team is, right? In terms of sticking up for each other. There's a bunch of new players on the team, right? You know, you've got Nick Waugh. You've got Joshua, you've got Matias Maccelli. Easton Cowan's a rookie that just joined the team. There's a bit of, I guess, melding that still needs to happen. And it's probably the same with the PK.
Scott Laughton's not playing right now. Scott Laughton's not playing right now. He's a big part of the PK.
They need some more time maybe to build the cohesiveness. Now, the preseason and training camp is to do that, but maybe it's just such a different dynamic not having Mitch Marner and some of the players that they had on the team last year that it's just taking that a little extra time. So I can give them a bit of grace on it, but yeah, don't take too long.
And I'm going to make a point on that, actually. Sorry, not right now, but sort of interrupt. But I'm going to make a point on that when I talk about the Canucks, because it's a very similar idea. You do not want to fall behind in this early in the season. You don't want to go 0-10 and then have to play catch up the rest of the season, right? Because that's the part that hurts.
Florida's 3-0 and they're missing their two best players.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So
exactly. Well, and like, you're talking about star players, right? Toronto's star players, besides Morgan Riley right now, need to show up. You know, like, Austin Matthews has been good, but he can be better. Like, again, we're talking about a former MVP. His only goal so far is an empty net goal.
Yeah.
You know, at least as of three games. There might be playing another game before the podcast comes out here, but he's got one goal as of we're doing this.
Yeah.
Kalle Yarnkirk, who is expected to be traded this offseason, is leading the team in goals right now as we're doing.
He looked pretty good, too.
And he's looking good. You know, like, it's something's got to change. Again, cohesiveness, whatever it is, listening to the coach, firing Mark Savard, I don't give a crap what it is. Your role players can't be your star players. You have your star players that are paid the way that they are to carry the team, to be the leadership, to make things happen. And while role players scoring is great, you need that. especially in the playoffs, you need role players to show up. Yeah. You need your star players to be playing like star players all the effing time.
Yeah. You know, like I was saying earlier, our teams seem to be mirroring each other because Vancouver has the exact same problem. Their star players are not scoring. Their star players are not really moving their feet. They're making drastic mistakes. They're currently 1-2, just like the Leafs are. They've literally, and this is what the discussion on talk radio has been, that they've literally played, and so in three games, what is that, 9 total periods, they played one good period.
And the Leafs have had 2.
Yeah, I think. And that was against Calgary on game number 1, where they scored, you know, 4 goals to take a 5-1 lead in the end, and that's the third period of game 1. So, you know, Elias Pettersson, nowhere to be found. You know, you've caught...
Wait, which one is he?
Yeah. Number 40. Pettersson? The guy who's Pettersson? Making $11.6 million,
Yo, gotcha,
right?
Okay, yeah. Nylander, got it.
Yeah. and you know, there are players who are doing good things. I mean, Quinn Hughes is always going to be Quinn Hughes, but even he's making mistakes that are costing the team. You know, it's like, it's frustrating to watch. The PK has been really good, which is something I think you are going to expect when you've got somebody like Adam Foote running the team. The power play is not good at all. They barely score if they have it all. The biggest shining star on the team right now, Kiefer Sherwood. I think he's got 4 goals in 3 games.
Wow.
So
how
just
many
incredible.
Hits, though?
Oh, like he's probably already broken his record, you know. but you know, when you, it's concerning when a third line player is the best player on your team at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, the one argument that they were saying on talk radio was that, you know, okay, it's a new coach, it's a new coaching staff, you're getting a whole new structure, you know, it's going to take some time for you to figure that structure out, and that's why all these mistakes are happening.
Yeah.
But that's what the preseason's for, right? And again, it's the same argument. Like, why aren't you guys playing more games in the preseason? That's on coaching. I think more than anything, that's on coaching. The coach needs to say, you need to play at least 3 games in the preseason, especially in a year where you've got 6 preseason games. Get your young guys playing those first 3 games to get their experience out there, whatever it is, to see what you have. And then get your big-time players in there so you can get that structure down. You know, and then you look at, you know, I look at, you know, we had Braden Coutts on the team. He was sent back to Seattle today, which I think is the right move. You can't expect anything from a player who's never played in the NHL before. So after 3 games, he got 3 games in the NHL. He can now go back to Seattle and bring that experience to his game totally. In Seattle. And he's still the captain of the team in Seattle. So he's going to be that leader. He's going to have all that experience. I think he's going to have an incredible year in the WHL this year. I want to follow his play in the WHL this year so I can see what we have coming, you know, down the pipeline. But the NHL team really needs to get their crap together, like you say, and really figure out this structure so that they can build something, because you do not want to fall behind 10 games and have to play catch up for the rest of the season. You will miss the playoffs again.
Now, I know I obviously had the reaction I just did in regards to these first few games. You know, I guess you have to look at expectation versus reality too. Obviously, you know, sometimes teams are going to start slowly. I think the expectation when we're looking at, say, the Maple Leafs, and then we're looking at the Canucks, our expectation, because we expect that they're elite teams based upon the players that they have and the records that they have, even though the Canucks didn't make the playoffs last year, they made it to the conference final the year before, right? So the expectation is that these elite teams should start off well. And then
they didn't make the conference final, by the way.
It was okay.
Second round.
Sorry.
But still, they made it game 7 of the second round. Yeah, so they almost made the conference final.
So your expectations for these elite teams to start off elite, because it does make the fans anxious when you're not,
honestly, like you look at that game against Calgary
and
you go, okay, they have to win this game. Yeah. They're the better team.
Absolutely.
And then you, like you say, like they go into it and they just play dead for the first period and a half.
Yeah.
And then finally turn it on and they score a goal. So they finally get some legs under them and then they score 4 more in the third period. So really the third period is the only period they actually played good, structure wise. Right. But ever since then, it's just like nothing.
And I guess we're annoyed with the reality is that it's only a few games into the season. We need to wait to see what
and
the
you're
rest
right.
of it looks like. And the reason I'm mentioning that, sorry, not.
No,
cut
I'm
you
cutting
off.
You off. My apologies.
You look at teams like the Edmonton Oilers a few years ago. You look at the St. Louis Blues when they won the Cup.
Oh,
horrible starts.
100%.
But again, Edmonton made the Cup final. They did lose, but took seven games. And the Blues won.
Blues won that year. Yeah. So. Yeah. It's very true. And I mean, honestly, like, you're right. I mean, we're hockey fans. We're going to be irrational all the time. But we want to see those. We want to see that effort, right? Like, that's the big thing you're talking about. You want to see the effort. You want to be able to see some semblance of a structure that they're playing under that you can say, okay, I can see what they're trying to do there. Yeah. But if they're literally playing like garbage, and you're sitting here watching it, that's why I get frustrated when I watch hockey. If I watch the Canucks and they're playing like they don't care, that's hard for me to sit back and go, okay, I can see where this team's going to go, right?
Yeah, you think after nine periods, as you mentioned, that even with a losing record and like from a Toronto perspective with the players they have on their team, you should have been able to put together four, five, six at least decent periods.
Yeah.
But when you've put together two.
Yeah. That's concerning.
And I mean,
but again, early, right?
It's early. Three games in. I mean, here's the problem that Vancouver faces now, though. We're going on a five-game road trip starting tomorrow. Thursday, in Dallas. So losing against St. Louis last night. I would argue on paper, St. Louis and Vancouver should be almost on par with each other. They lost badly to St. Louis. Like, St. Louis had their way with them. They lost to Edmonton. Edmonton is supposed to be one of the best teams in the league. But I have always said Edmonton, I think, is a little overrated. And Oiler fans will fight me to the death, I'm sure. But I think from what I can see on paper, I don't see what they see. I don't have the stars in my eyes when I look at the Oilers. I think there are pieces that they're missing. There are a lot of pieces that they're missing. And now with all the grit that they lost on their team, it's going to be really hard for them to go all the way to the finals again. Right? I think you would agree with me.
Yeah. Well, McDavid's going to stick with them now for the next 3 years too. So.
but you know, they're going to have to do something to figure out how they're going to combat the people doing all the nasty stuff to them in the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
So I don't see Oilers. I don't see the Oilers the way they were last year. So Vancouver, in my opinion, Vancouver held their own against them. They still lost, right? And so that's kind of the mentality I have. And it's really frustrating to see your team not bring it because you know that they went into the offseason mad about how they finished. So, yes. Like, where is that drive that they should have right now? And I think that's the question I have.
Results aside, any particular frustrations with the new systems?
No. I mean, for me, it makes sense that they're not going to have a system kind of dead set, something that they're not used, because it is going to be different than the way it was last year, right? But at the same time, like that's what I say. Like, why not play the preseason and get that stuff underway? Yeah. But no, there's nothing concerning in my eyes. They haven't been so dreadful that I'm like, why are you guys doing this? You know, the big mistakes are that have happened specifically in the St. Louis game are the mistakes that I said would happen when I talked about the structure that they were playing under. You remember I told you they were doing a pinch system where they would have one of the defensemen kind of pinch in and try to join the forecheck, leaving one defenseman back, which my big concern was now you're going to have odd man rushes coming back, and that's exactly what's happened. So they need to figure out the structure and how they're going to make that work so that at least the defenseman can get back and try to defend. But, you know, I think more than anything, it's going to take some games to figure that out. But like I said, why not play in the preseason, right? Mm.
Looks like Demko's playing all right so far.
Demko's incredible right now. Right now, yeah. I would put Demko in the Vezina category after three games. He's only played two, but in those two games, he was incredible, making some incredible saves. And I think that Demko is one of those players that has that drive going into this season because of all the injuries he faced last year. He knew that he had to come into the season and be like top notch, and he has been. I think Lankinen struggled a little bit yesterday. I think it's not entirely his fault, of course. The entire team struggled yesterday, but they really need to figure out how they're going to bounce back, especially against a team like Dallas, who's expected to be one of the best teams in the league this year. So
I heard Shorthouse the other night say Lekker Mäki.
Yeah.
I thought it was Lekker Mäki.
Yeah, so...
And the entire time they've been saying Lekkermäki. I'm like, you're wrong, man. Say it right. That's well, not his name.
It's so funny because you get a player drafted, right? And then you think, okay, this is how they pronounce it. Lekkermäki, Lekkermäki, Lekkermäki. And that's what everyone's saying in all their reports and whatnot. And then Shorthouse is one of those guys who gets to talk to the players and discover this is actually how you pronounce their name.
Yeah.
And I know, like, you know, for the Clippers, for example, here in Nanaimo, Dan Marshall, the play-by-play guy, he tells me, as the PA announcer, how to pronounce everybody's names.
I do the same thing, yep.
And so it's really important to, like, talk to those guys and get that name down. But, yeah, Lekkermäki is how they've been pronouncing it.
The other thing I want to kind of touch upon, because you're talking about Demko being a Vezina caliber goaltender this year.
After two games.
I'm looking at the same with Dustin Wolf. Calgary's got the same record as of tonight, the same record as the Leafs. But you look at the first game of the season where they came back and beat the Flames, it was Wolf that made that happen, kept them in the game the entire time.
Yep.
They lost the two following games after that, but I know as of tonight right now, they are winning their game currently, and so they might have a 2-2 record.
Wolf, the first game was against Edmonton, correct?
Edmonton, that's
correct. Yeah, and then they won in a shootout.
Yeah, and then they lost to Vancouver at the 5-1 game.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, if they can rely on Wolf and the defense can show up, if they're a playoff team this year, I think Demko and Wolf probably both be in the best of talk.
Just gotta keep it up, right?
Yeah, as you know, I'm a Flames fan as well, so I do follow them. I have family back at home, or family back in Calgary, sorry, that follows the Flames religiously as well. So I hate to admit it.
As a Canucks fan, and I'll probably be denounced by all the other Canucks fans out there, but I was cheering for Calgary against that game against Edmonton because I hate Edmonton that much.
It's too bad you didn't say that about the Canucks, right? Cheering against the Canucks.
I know, right? But, you know, it's going to be a really interesting season to see how things turn out. I really hope our teams can turn things around because it is it's some sad hockey right now, I think. And, I mean, I'm scared to see what that game against Dallas is going to look like. But I'll stick through at least for a period and a half. We'll figure it out from there. Gentlemen, let's talk a little bit about movies. Our favorite subject. We don't talk enough about movies, but we were discussing kind of off air, earlier today, talking about, James Cameron movies. My son is currently obsessed with Titanic. He's watched it at least 70 times in the past 6 months.
No.
Yeah. Like, watches it every day. We say to him, okay, because he watches it on his tablet. And we say, okay, you have until 6:15 p.m. to start watching it. If you start it after that, you cannot watch it because it's a three-hour movie. It's like 3 hours and, I don't know.
7 minutes.
Or something like that. But I thought it was kind of an intriguing topic, talking about James Cameron movies. This is a director who, of course, is a fellow Canadian like us. Directed some of the biggest movies in the world, and some of them are pretty incredible.
He's Canadian.
Oh, you didn't know that? Yeah,
I'm not gonna lie to you. I did not know that.
Here's an interesting fact. Let me just break this down, not to toot my own horn, but I do a TikTok channel that I discuss Canadian trivia, and one of the trivia topics I did about a week ago or so was James Cameron. I said this movie director was a truck driver originally, taught himself filmmaking while driving truck, and became one of the biggest filmmakers in the world.
Absolutely.
James Cameron from Ontario.
It's funny you say that because one of the trivia things says, after seeing Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope, Cameron quit his job as a truck driver to enter the film industry.
There you go.
Nice. Yep. Good man.
He said, if they can do it, I can.
Do you know, like, it's what's kind of funny about how he even started his career? His very first film, there was a remake on it. Absolutely awful. If you look at the Metascores on it, it's considered probably one of the worst movies ever made. It was the sequel to Piranha, the old Piranha. Piranha 2 called The Spawning.
Yeah.
That was his very first movie. Every movie pretty much after that's been bangers.
Yeah.
I can't believe that Terminator, which is his next movie, they trusted him with that. The fact that his first movie just bombed so bad.
Yeah. It's actually surprising it's not a cult classic at this point because of it.
It's hilarious. And it's just banger after banger at that. You know, Terminator, he followed that up with Aliens.
Yeah.
Followed that up with The Abyss, which I loved The Abyss when I was younger. Such a good movie.
It's probably my favorite James Cameron.
At the time, it was like one of the most incredible CG movies out there, right?
Yeah. Terminator 2, right after The Abyss.
Yeah.
You know, which True Lies after that. And then the big one for him that won him his Academy Award, Titanic.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, the Avatar movies when we when we continue that lineage. He's just, he's literally printing money at this point, right?
I have two movies in particular that really pique my interest, knowing that he was involved with them, and I did not know this. And he actually wasn't director. One of them, he was an uncredited writer, but also an executive producer.
Yeah.
And then the second one, he was an executive producer. The first one is Point Break.
Yeah.
Which is one of my all-time favorite classic action movies.
I was literally talking about Point Break with somebody today because we were talking about Keanu Reeves acting with... It wasn't today. It was yesterday, pardon me. Or Sunday. Anyway, Keanu Reeves acting with Patrick Swayze and I think of Point Break.
Yeah.
But apparently they've done another movie together as well. And it's... I think it's Youngblood.
I
believe they were in Youngblood together.
Yep. Nice.
So
a couple of Canadians also.
That's right.
And the other one, executive producer, he was on a movie called Sanctum.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Have you seen Sanctum?
Cave
exploration?
Yeah,
I think I've heard of it. I've never seen it. But
It's basically an Australian-made movie, to be honest with you. If you haven't seen it, it's very, very, very good.
Interesting. Okay.
But I like that kind of thing, like The Descent, and there's another movie called The Cave with Cole Hauser.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, I like Cole Hauser. Kind of cheesy, but interesting. Sanctum's more of like... realistic cave exploration movie. There isn't monsters.
Yeah.
Not to give too much away for other films, but it's literally about them getting screwed and having to find a way out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it, like, it's so, like survival, so good. So good. Yeah.
So we only have a few minutes. So let's quickly each of us kind of explain our favorite James Cameron movie. I almost called him Jim. Like I know
Jim
the guy.
Cameron.
let's Jimmy. Talk about our favorite James Cameron movie. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay,
please do.
Especially the extended version of it. Terminator 2 was... I loved The Abyss, but I could have... Especially in my teens and early 20s, I could have watched Terminator 2 like every weekend, still enjoyed it every time. Like, the acting isn't top-notch, but the story is actually really captivating compared to the first Terminator. The first Terminator was good, but like it was just so well done. Arnold was seeing him go from a bad guy to a good guy, and you know his one-liners are always hilarious in movies, but it was really well-directed. That was the one thing I really liked about Terminator 2 Judgment Day, is that it is probably, in my opinion, one of his best-directed films. People probably argue Titanic and everything else, but again, those action scenes and to... fit everything together.
The way he told the story. Yeah it was absolutely awesome.
Loved it.
Brando, what about you?
The Abyss for me. Yeah, it is. I think the way it was filmed, some of the scenes, there was actually a rumor that Ed Harris at one point during filming punched James Cameron in the face because of how he basically, like, his character Bud was like literally drowning.
Yeah.
And James Cameron's like, no, keep filming. We got to get this. And Harris got up and like railed him in the cheek and was like, I've had enough of this, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to butcher her name. Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like one of the scenes where she's literally being dragged and the perception is that she's drowned.
Wow.
She was holding her breath while he dragged her back like, they had a tank that was flooded, and she was holding her breath lifeless there while, like, there was hardly stunt people used at all. Actors did everything.
That is some scary stuff. For
sure. And I think a lot of the times the actors said that, you know, this was one of the hardest films they ever had to make because of the conditions, the dampness, the cold, the dark, the long hours of filming. It just, you know, it was wrenching on their brain and their emotions and everything, right?
And I mean, that just goes to show the kind of director James Cameron is. He goes to literally all depths of the earth to try and get that shot that he needs.
Yeah.
We are out of time, but I'll quickly say mine. My favorite is True Lies. Once again, for the Puck and Pod, my name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
We'll see you guys in the next one.